to think about it. And I thought about it. I don't know what it means. And I looked it up. It's in the 19th chapter of Matthew, the 23rd and the 20th chapter.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. In Matthew also? Mm-hmm. 19th chapter, 20th verse, huh?
No, it's the last verse of the 19th chapter and then the 20th chapter.
Oh, I see. That's chapter 20 is a continuation of 19.
It's mentioned again in the 20th chapter. Mm-hmm. I don't know what verse.
Verily I say unto you, that ye which have followed me in the regeneration, when the Son of Man shall sit in the throne of his glory, ye also shall sit upon 12 thrones, judging the 12 tribes of Israel. And every one that hath forsaken houses, or brethren, or sisters, or father, or mother, or wife, or children, or lands, for my name's sake, shall receive 100-fold, and shall inherit everlasting life. But many that are first shall be last, and the last shall be first. Has anybody else got an idea what that may mean?
It's a vague sense.
Well, in what?
Experience of you, or at least of you.
Well, it doesn't say least, though.
Well, no, but then another place says the greatest of you are the ones who are the least of you.
Well, what you're referring to, I think, Phil, is where the disciples were talking among themselves and wondering which one was the greatest. And Jesus said, he that shall be the greatest shall be the servant of all. Isn't that the one you're referring to?
No, he says someplace the greatest shall be the least.
Well, in that sense, of course, if it does say that, which I don't doubt, then it would mean that it was speaking of the person who was least conscious of their ego. But many that are first shall be last, and the last shall be first doesn't quite apply to that. That doesn't quite apply to it, I don't think, do you?
Well, I would say it would apply to those who would attain what he's speaking of in the prior sentence. In the crucifixion of the ego.
Let's go on and read some more. For the kingdom of heaven is likened to a man that is an householder, which went out early in the morning to hire laborers in his vineyard. And when he had agreed with the laborers for a penny a day, he sent them into his vineyard. And he went out about the third hour and saw others standing idle in the marketplace, and said unto them, Go ye also into the vineyard, and whatsoever is right I will give you. And they went their way. Again he went out about the sixth and ninth hour and did likewise. And about the 11th hour he went out and found others standing idle and saith unto them, Why stand ye here all the day idle? They say unto him, Because no man hath hired us. He saith unto them, Go ye also into the vineyard, and whatsoever is right, that shall ye receive. So when even was come, the Lord of the vineyard saith unto his steward, Call the laborers and give them their hire, beginning from the last unto the first. And when they came that were hired about the 11th hour, they received every man a penny. But when the first came, they supposed that they should have received more, and they likewise received every man a penny. And when they had received it, they murmured against the good man of the house, saying, These last have wrought but 1 hour, and thou hast made them equal unto us, which have borne the burden and heat of the day. But he answered one of them and said, Friend, I do thee no wrong. Didst not thou agree with me for a penny? Take that, thine is, and go thy way. I will give unto this last even as unto thee. Is it not lawful for me to do what I will with mine own? Is thine eye evil because I am good? So the last shall be first, and the first last, for many be called, but few chosen. That explains the whole thing, doesn't it? You see the reference to it now? No. Well, during the year since I began this ministry for God, I have perhaps had come before me several hundred people. Now, all of these people came for one reason or another. Some of them came because they wanted God realization. Some of them came with great sincerity. But somehow, their interest waned. Some came, and then they were transferred out of town. Others came out of curiosity. And some came to persecute and revile. I was 1947 when I first started a center. That's a good many years, 18 years. And so out of all of these people, of course, many who are out of town are still with us. And they write regularly. And they're very devoted. But out of all of these, this is what we have, this group here. Many are called, but few are chosen. Blessed is he who is chosen of the Lord. So in this case, where Jesus has written this parable about the men who started the work, and their agreement had been for a penny, and they worked much longer than the others, and then they were very disagreeable about the fact that those who had come later were still going to receive the penny. Well, in the first place, people keep coming and going, and those that are really sincere will stay on the path to the very end, as I said. But we have new ones constantly coming up. It's just like they have started in the kindergarten school. They have then graduated, or not graduated, but been promoted to the first grade, and they have studied the lessons, taken the tests, and passed the examinations, and they keep going from grade to grade. So that those who were ready in the beginning had the opportunity of having the advantage of worshiping God in the way of truth all that additional time. But in the meantime, these others who are definitely sincere and who want God have finally graduated to the place where they are ready to receive him. Do you see? They weren't ready when the first one started, but now they are. Perhaps they were too young. Perhaps their consciousness was not ready. So you have a constant going and coming all the time, and out of all of those that come, some will stay and get their God realization, and others will not. Now it is said that everyone, without fail, every single solitary soul which goes out from God must finally return to God. So even those who came and went away must eventually go to God. But because some that may have come later were on their way up and their sincerity was greater than those that came in the beginning, they will go to God first, even though they were last. And the first ones who came, because they tarried on the way, will go last, even though they were first. Do I make myself clear in that?
Well, yeah.
You see,
how many of these first ones are still here?
Well, that's true. I say some of the first ones,
yeah.
But not all. Those, for instance, who came and they went to work, but yet they were found idle in the marketplace. And, no, that wasn't it. As the master looked, he found others idle in the marketplace. These are the people who are still in the worldly consciousness. And so he offered them the opportunity of going to God also. And the price paid them would be God realization, you see, the same as those who came first and who stayed. But also you find that those who came in the beginning and did not stay still have to go to God. They will eventually get it. But those who were first and didn't stay will be last. Is that clear to everybody? Do you understand that, Lauren? Mm-hmm. When? This is a very interesting thing. And it behooves us to realize that the aim of life is God realization. That is our total and sole aim, or should be. And we should always keep God's name on our lips. Everything that we do should be done for God and not for ourselves. And if we can come to the state of realization where we realize that God, having created all things, is in all things, and that everything and every creature which he has created, no matter how small, has in that God in all of his infinity and perfection. Everything is God. And again, when you come to this state of realization, if you have the universal vision, you see God standing before you, no matter how that one behaves, because it is God manifesting in that way, in that form. Now, in order to go to God, you have to have keen aspiration. Most people who come have this, or at least they are sincere in thinking that they have it. But in order for the attainment of complete God realization, all of the heart, all of the love, all of the mind, all of the strength, and all of the soul must be completely centered upon God. You must love God more than anyone or anything in this world, because you must realize that without him, we would not ourselves be alive and have the privilege of this life. Further than that, if it were not for him, we would not have those whom we have known and grown to love, our relatives, our friends, our dear ones, our acquaintances. All of these have been given to us by God. And then we have to go still further and realize that the means for survival for ourselves and those for whom we are responsible also comes from God. That all power, all intelligence, all energy, all will come from God alone. And that is he himself who sits on the throne of the consciousness of every single human being, who projects the thoughts that we in our state of human consciousness manifesting in the human ego fail to realize. And we take credit for thinking these things, for doing these things, for the success of that which is brought forth from the infinite within us. And yet we in that human state can truly do nothing without God. As Jesus said, I of myself am nothing. It is my Father who doeth the works. When you realize that all of the money, all of the bounty, all of the fruits that grow on the trees and on the vines, and the vegetables that grow in the earth are given to you by God alone, it is true that you sow the seeds and you reap the harvest. But who gave you the seed to sow in the first place? And who directed you how to do it, how to water it, how to fertilize it, in order that it may attain its most beautiful state in the life which is accorded it? We are so self-centered in our human consciousness, and our every thought revolves around ourselves. We are extremely selfish in most cases, because we want those whom we say we love around us only for our own comfort and our own happiness. True love, divine love, is that love which is so great that it thinks not of itself at all, but only of the good and the well-being of the one beloved. When we can forget our little selves completely in service to God, how wonderful that is. The only way to attain this state is to keep God's name, His form, which is your personal God, ever before you, His name ever upon your lips. And as you really do this, when you work at it with everything you have, no matter what you are doing, be conscious of Him. Repeat His name out loud. And gradually as you do this, the name will go within and it will repeat itself silently until the mind is completely and absolutely controlled and you are its master. The mind is just stuff, brain stuff, and it accepts anything which is suggested to it, whether it be good or bad. Of itself it has no power except that which we give it. And we must realize that this is true, that if we are to become the master of ourselves, the ultimate aim of our life in order to attain God realization should be to conquer and to control this mind, which is constantly getting us into trouble. And this happens as a result of its contact with the five senses, because these sensory motors of touch, sight, taste, smell, and hearing, we take these in all of the time, and whatever we contact as a result of our contact with them is transmitted to the brain. And it is taken into the memory storehouse. And as you take in these various things as a result of these five senses, or the objects of the five senses, they influence your thinking and your behavior. And they also, of course, influence the state of your spiritual consciousness and development. So it behooves you to watch the thoughts that go through the mind. They're just like the waves of the ocean. And we are so much the creatures of habit that we can sit for hours at a time and not do one tiny bit of constructive thinking. We are not controlling our thoughts at all. We are not sifting and sorting the good from the bad or retaining the good, but rather we just let them parade through like an army of soldiers, and they take over. And like the will-o'-the-wisp, they just take us here and there. Or like we're out in the middle of the ocean in a bathtub without any rudder to steer our boat. And therefore, it is very difficult for us to reach our destination. So we are given the methods. And one is to constantly think of God, to take His name. Then we are given all of the techniques, the methods for concentration. We are given the technique of concentrating on the spiritual eye, the one for listening to the Om sound, the Hong Sha technique, which is to watch and control the breath. Breathlessness is deathlessness. But we do not accomplish these things overnight. We go through many, many experiences. In the beginning, we are down in the valley, in darkness and in ignorance, and through the suffering which through the misuse of our own free will we bring upon ourselves. We have enough of it, so that at last we want to turn our faces toward God. So then we climb the mountain. And having climbed the mountain, we see a wider vista than we had ever seen before. A beautiful panorama. And we experience a certain amount of happiness and joy because we have attained that height. But having used up all of the good that we have earned, it is necessary for us to go back down into the valley, to have more experiences, to live, to laugh, to be joyful and happy, but also to be tearful, sorrowful, and to have problems, because it is these very problems which gradually act like a pickaxe to chip away at the ego. And it keeps doing that and doing it and doing that, because through suffering we are purified. Through the experiences which bring us pain, we learn, we grow. It is just like the seed that is planted in the ground. It has to die, or to break its seed, it has to die to that which it is in the outer before that which is within can break forth and become the highest of which it is capable. And it is born in pain. This death is painful because something breaks, something gives, something is destroyed, in order that the life within may come forth. And it is that very destruction which purifies and which brings forth the beauty that is within. So the human ego is destroyed through suffering. It is only this way that we grow, because if everything in the human sense was as we wanted it and as we hoped it would be, we would never develop, because we'd be content with all these material things, the things of the senses. But you know, no matter how much money you have, no matter how great your comforts, no matter how much traveling you can do, how many things you can buy, how much power it gives you over people, still, if you do not have God realization within you, you are not content. You are not happy. You can have the finest homes, the finest cars, the finest yachts. You can be have a name which is great, have fame and fortune, and still if you do not have God, you have nothing. It is when you can have all of these things and yet not be attached to them nor affected by them that you have really arrived at the state of grace. Then your wealth is of the Spirit. It is the greatest wealth there is. The other disappears, but this wealth you take with you. You climb the mountain and you go down in the valley, and this is the way. Many people think they have retrogressed because they have had what they call a blank space, a dry spell. And they can't feel the inspiration to seek God, nor the love of God. But they've been thrown back into the human self. And they're unhappy, having once tasted this higher type of happiness, joy, and bliss, which comes from God and which is God, who is our very self. We will never again be content to stay down in that valley and enjoy the things which the pseudo-gold will buy for us. This restlessness takes hold of us until gradually again we pick up our feet, no matter how low we have fallen, and we start to climb this mountain again. And each time we climb, we get a little bit higher, and we can stay a little bit longer, and we enjoy a little more of the ecstasy of God. But this is still in the human sense. And even when we have reached the highest of ecstasy that a human being can reach, still this is not what we seek. This is the false ecstasy, as I have told you before. And you must avoid it like the plague. Maybe taste it to see what it is like. But don't be tempted to accept that instead of the very highest which will come to you later. Because if you do accept it, then you will lose your hold on life, and you will wander through the streets as one not knowing what you are doing. Only a very great master can lift you up out of such a state. Only a very great master. So having attained the highest of spiritual realization in the human state, and having refused this false ecstasy, you start to walk what we call the way of the cross, the 14 stations of the cross, as the consciousness proceeds up the spine through the 7 spinal centers, each of them having the 2 powers which make 14. And you are scourged and lashed by the forces as you go up, because when you get to this point, then truly God lifts you up and puts you through the experience which is told about in St. Matthew. And it is very, very difficult indeed. As you wend your way up, it says Jesus fell. You make mistakes, and you fall from the high ideal which you have set for yourself. And someone else must help you to carry your cross until you have strength again to do it. And finally, you come to the point of complete and total surrender to the will of God. This is the only true love for God. Lip service is not real love for God. Just worshiping God on Sunday is not true love for God. He must have become your very life, the integral part of yourself. You must realize and come to the point of realization where everything that the Bible tells you is about God and the Savior who dwells within every man. Christ has come in the flesh of every man. And in this total surrender, you want to change. You want to give up everything that you are or have been and everything that you possess, and lay it at the lotus feet of the Almighty. And when this time comes, He puts you through the crucifixion. And it is a very painful process again, because it is the breaking up of the old in order that the new might come forth, in breaking up all that which was earthly and human within us, in order that the divine might live and be made manifest. But even after you have gone through the crucifixion, you do not immediately go directly to the highest heaven within your being. You are not immediately lifted up to sit at the right hand of God. But again, there are 3 separate spaces or days or periods of time or planes of consciousness which you must go through. And sometimes these last for several years at a time. Sometimes a few months, sometimes a year, sometimes 2, 3, 4, 5. I have been going through this particular thing that I am speaking of since 1954. That's 11 years. I have gone through many planes of consciousness. I have gone through the crucifixion. But don't forget what it says in the Bible here. And it speaks of all of the children within you that you have created through the thoughts and the vibrations which of your own free will you have built within your own kingdom. And those that are good are crucified with Christ. They have died with Him. And there is only a residue left to carry on. But there are a few of the good. And you go through the dark night of the soul. It is the state of purgatory, the state in between, where you are neither what you were nor what you hope to become. And this is indeed a time of darkness, because you can see no light anywhere. You cannot even feel your love for God. If your faith is great enough, you know that He is there, but you can't find Him. And yet, this is what you have chosen to do. And so if you are to come out of this darkness, you must continue to endure. You must continue to live each moment at a time, doing the very best you can, and leaving the rest to God, because that's all you can do. You hope that He comes, that He will come, and that He will lift you up. But when Christ comes a second time, you see, everything must be prepared. And this purgatory which you find yourself in is a state of purging. That is what purgatory means, to purge, to make clean. And don't forget that you have spent incarnations building up all of the barnacles that encrust your soul. And you don't get rid of them overnight. And so you keep on trying and you keep on falling. But each time you try and each time you fall, you realize what you have done wrong. And you have the ability to see that which is within yourself a little more clearly. And you see that it isn't always what you hoped it might be, that what you have deluded yourself into thinking that it was. But finally, you see yourself face to face as you really are. You see all the darkness which you have accumulated within yourself. And you have the extreme and immediate desire of getting rid of that, of climbing out of the darkness, because you are as one lost. It's a terrible thing to go through. And sometimes, as I say, it lasts not only for days, weeks, months, but for years. But you see, if your faith in God within you and in the universal God, because they are not different, is strong enough, gradually, as you face yourself, as you explore the depths of your own heart, of your own mind, and you have the extreme desire to control and overcome all of the sins, those things which separate you from your realization of God, you will make the effort to consciously control. You will become aware immediately when you say or do something wrong or think something wrong. And you will say to God, "You, if I cannot do this myself, I've tried over and over again. God, you must help me. Shower your grace upon me. Reveal thyself to me. You must help me to do this because I am weak. I am helpless. I am down in this dungeon of darkness. And I can't find my way out. You must come to me. You must help me." And gradually, as you consciously make the effort to ask God to help you, as you consciously do everything which you, because you still have all of the memory of the things of the five senses in the 10 qualities of the subtle mind, and that subtle mind is constantly tempting you to go back and indulge in those things of the senses. Gradually, as you control these things, you are able to see everything within yourself more clearly. You realize the way that you have come and the way that is yet to be gone. And making this effort, it is said that even in the darkest hour, we are making the greatest progress because we could not see these things within ourselves unless the light of God was shining within us more brightly. So instead of being discouraged and despondent and melancholy and of giving up, we should rejoice when we get to that state where we realize these things. We should take a new lease on life, as it were, and make an additional and stronger effort than we ever did before to conquer, to control this little self. And we must be willing to go through any experience, regardless of what it be, in all the three worlds within us, if we are to attain the state which we want, the glory of our own being. We have to be willing and to have the courage to take the greatest hardship, the greatest punishment that God sees fit to put upon us. If we are not willing, then the human ego, the sins which separate us from God, they're still there. And we are not yet pure enough for this great light. And yet, having made this effort, we say, God, I have tried so long. I have tried so hard. Am I not worthy? And God looks down upon us and He says, my child, there is still a way to go yet. You are still dead with Christ. Now remember this. You are still dead with Christ. Even though you move and seemingly have life within the human body, you, the human ego, is dead with Christ, and you are not any longer what you once were. The human personality, in the sense that it manifested before, is not present. The shadow of it is there. The motions, that which is apparently it, is there, but it isn't so. And as you go farther and farther and farther through the different planes of consciousness, your ability to remember the things of your human life gets weaker and weaker. The images grow dimmer because that part of you is gradually dying. All of the humanness in you is gradually dying until there is the death of the cross, or that which crosses, or the bad which crosses the good which comes from God. There must be complete destruction of the cross, so that instead of being twain, the subtle serpent in the field, the electric cord in the spine must rise, go through the little hole under the brain, and out the top, so there is nothing there but God. Then there is no cross, don't you see? And all this happens while you are in the human body. Some people take a long time to die. Some because perhaps they have come with a greater destiny and are working this destiny out on a world basis. Others on an individual basis because they have created much in the way of bad karma, and it must all be worked out. Some go through the crucifixion, and because their karma has not been so great, they don't realize that they are going through this crucifixion at all. They have problems, they suffer desperately, but they take it as just another human experience. I know a case in point that I'm thinking of right now where this happens, where the person went through this experience many years ago, went through many of the spiritual experiences which we have discussed. This person tried to be committed to a mental institution because of the tremendous torture and turmoil that they were going through. And yet today, that one has risen high in spiritual consciousness. But still, they didn't realize that they had gone through a crucifixion. Each one has his own, some small and some great. But the guru comes to help the individual to liberate themselves from that which is human within them and to take them to the divine. The guru is the dispeller of darkness and the giver of light. You must look beyond the human personality of the guru. You must look to God in that vehicle which He has brought to you. You must see beyond appearances and consciously commune and be one with the great light within such a one. Contact and darshan of saints is absolutely necessary, because such a one, having gone through the fire of testing, having overcome, has been lifted to a high state of consciousness, and the power to inspire, the power to lift up in the spirit, is great in such a one. I remember the many years that I sat at my master's feet. Sometimes I was in Seattle. Occasionally I could go down and see him, but in all my life, I have never seen him more than a dozen times. And yet look at the tremendous impact. Look at the tremendous impact that he made on my life. And whenever I was with him, time and space stood still. And there was nothing there but God. An infinite peace and infinite bliss. And whenever I go back to those hours in my memory and my consciousness, I can hear his voice speaking just as clearly as though he stood before me in the flesh. I can hear the words of wisdom which poured forth. Some of them I remember, but few by comparison. But that isn't important. The fact is that my love for God in him was so great. My communion with him, my oneness with him, was absolutely so perfect that he was never separated from me. And he lifted me up and he took me with him. Why? Because of that faith. Because of that faith and that love. It isn't important to remember the words. But if you remember how you felt then, if you remember how you were lifted up in the Spirit, when the time comes, if it is ever your destiny, to have God use you, to have this great privilege, He Himself will supply the words. Truth is. And if that truth has borne fruit within you, the harvest will be great. You need not go to a book. Because you have lived all of the things in the Scriptures. You know beyond any question of a doubt because you have had the courage and the love and the patience and the endurance to go through every single test and to overcome. God is within you. He is within such a one, and it is He who speaks from such a one. The human consciousness, the human will for recognition, for fame, for power, grows less day by day. There is no desire for that whatsoever. There is the desire to be the least among all, to be the child and the servant of all. Because in forgetfulness of self, the self is attained. And the glory of that self is so great that when you have seen it, words cannot describe it. How can you describe the indescribable, the infinite, that which is beyond all things, and yet which is in all things? Words are such futile things. But you keep on through these various planes. You pay the full price for your God realization. And that full price means doing away with every thought, word, and action which belong to you as a human being. Until you, as that person, no longer exists. And this is the reason you cannot remember. Your memory fails you. You act rather stupid at times, but it's because your mind is becoming more and more centered upon God and less upon the things of the world. And you are absolutely helpless to do anything else in this state. From one minute until the next, you do not remember what you were going to do. You have a thought of something you should do, and you go and you stand, and you ponder, and you think, and you worry. And you ask yourself, why did I come here? What was I going to do? And it's gone. Later it may come to you as a flash, and if you can get there quick enough, you may be able to do it. This is rather a frustrating experience. And the greater you go into that experience, the less you are able to do the ordinary things of the world. It is very difficult to keep your balance, to operate in the world, seemingly like any other human being, and still be in the state that you find yourself. No one can realize that unless they experience it. And believe me, it is difficult. Such a one in India has complete care. Every need is taken care of. The food is prepared. The clothes are washed and pressed. The place for the guru to stay is there. Everything is done with loving care by the devotees, realizing what a tremendous privilege it is for them to serve such a one, because in such serving, they attain more grace. They have the privilege of sitting at the feet of God in such a one, of being uplifted, of being inspired to seek that which the saint has. It is very different in the West, and exceedingly more difficult to operate under these circumstances than for any master in the East, because these things are accepted over there. Everybody goes to the faith, to the feet of anyone who says that they are a guru, a master, a saint, whether or not this is so, and they worship him, because the hearts of these people are like little children, and they are very gullible. But this is wonderful because they're so childlike. And it is said that even if a saint is a charlatan, or proves to be so, still, if the devotee is completely sincere, that one will be used as the instrument to take the devotee to God. God is no respecter of persons. And when the devotee's heart is completely with God, and his love for God supersedes and overwhelms everything else, God comes to him. He is constantly pounding upon the doors of our hearts, asking us to come, because he wants to take away this suffering, this torture, and to give us in their place peace and joy and happiness and eternal bliss. Yet we are so stubborn in the way that this human ego hangs on even to the very last, that we are still willing to substitute the dross for the gold. The ego is so deeply rooted, so deeply embedded. Believe me, you have to take a pickaxe to get rid of it. And it is said that the total crucifixion does not take place until the ego, the subtle ego, with the 10 qualities of the mind, is completely crucified. And that's why the memory fails in the human sense, because the ego of the mind is gradually disappearing. It is gradually dying, and it has no function in itself. So you are in that state of death, shall we say, until, as Christ said, if I be lifted up, and I, if I be lifted up, shall draw all men unto myself. And when the Christ within you is finally lifted up in all of his glory, then all of these forms within you who were dead with Christ will rise from the grave, as it explains in the Bible. They will rise and be alive again with Christ. Then you become the anointed one, the Christed one, the glorious one in God. And then you can say, O death, where is thy sting? Because you have met and conquered that last enemy, which is death. And you have become eternal and divine and liberated. You will complete the work which is done for you, which is designed for you in that particular incarnation. But then you will not be compelled to come back in that form unless you so desire. But because the memory of the form still lingers even a tiny bit, still there will be higher and higher and higher light forms that you must go through. And that is also talked about in the Bible. I don't remember just exactly, but I saw it the other day. And I thought how perfectly wonderful. They teach this so readily in the East, and yet we do not realize in the West that we have it right here in our own Bible, until gradually even the shadow of a form disappears and you are nothing but light, because you have become one with God. But still you will retain the consciousness of your individuality. How tremendous this is. In the lower states of human consciousness, this seems terrible to us because we are identified with the body. We are attached to the body. And even though we know that in sin everybody must die, that death comes to this bag of flesh, of bones, still we refuse to acknowledge it. We think maybe it won't happen to us. And if it is going to, it'll be maybe when we're 90 or 100. We have a long time to go yet. So you shy away from this idea of going into the complete light of becoming one with God. Why? Because you're still held by the power and the attraction of the senses, which take you into worldly consciousness, which tempt you with all of the things of the flesh, only to disappoint you and give you the taste of bitterness in your mouth. But when you have tasted these things, when you have found them wanting, and when truly you put your feet upon the path, wanting God realization with all of your heart, with all of your mind, with all of your soul, and with all of your strengths, God will help you. And if you will keep your full consciousness upon Him as you journey the way of the cross, He will guide you and protect you every inch of the way. You need not fear. And the power that comes within you is so great sometimes that it's hard to contain. Because when you arise from the dead on the third day, and this is the beginning of the ascension, the power of the Holy Ghost comes and it is given to the 12 apostles within you, or the 12 powers within you. And this feeling, this power of the Holy Ghost is so great that you have all you can do to contain it. You feel like you want to explode. It's a tremendous, tremendous experience. Everything that it says in this Bible, when man picks up his cross to follow the Christ in order that he may become his disciple, and it is the Christ within him, he goes through every single thing that is in here. Everything. So remember it well. And remember that everyone, every soul which is born and who is on the path has to go through these experiences in order to attain God realization. So let us go willingly. Let us not have to be dragged. Because if we drag our feet, once having put our feet on the path, the punishment lasts longer and it is more severe. And we have brought it upon ourselves. We can thank nobody nor blame no one for it, but our very own lethargy, state of lethargy, our inactivity, our lack of complete desire for the infinite beloved. It makes no difference to me what God asks of me now. I will be faithful even to the death of this body if necessary, because it must go sometime anyway. But I say this not because I know this, but because I am willing that even if this were to happen to me now or at any time in the future, I accept this because it is God's will and for His infinite plan and purpose. This is the state of my total surrender to Him. And regardless of how I seem on the outside, of how I play and laugh with you and try to be one of you and am one with you at all times, nevertheless, the state within is something very different. And only those who are tuned in with great love and devotion and worship for God can see what is really there. Many have, but some not yet. All of you must come to this state at one time. This is not just for me alone, but for all of you. That's why so many times the Master will say that you should not yet in too close proximity with the guru, with the saint, because to do so retards your spiritual development. You must have complete freedom to operate, to come together as we do here once or twice a week is the greatest thing. But if we had an ashram living together constantly, the mind would be focused on all of the little things that are in the outer world. It would be a smaller universe in itself with all of the conflict, all of the gossip, all of the cliques, everything that you find in the outer world that you gave up in order to come here and find God. So this is why we will never have an ashram. The ashram of God is in your heart. And if you will use the techniques which are given you to go into the cave of your heart, the cave of silence, the temple of the living God, you will find Him within you. You can travel to the farthest corners of the earth. You may seek Him everywhere, and indeed He is. But in order to realize Him, you have but one choice, and that is to do what you have been taught, to enter into your temple, to seal it very tight, to forget the things of time and space, and you'll become one with His infinite light. This is the only way. This is your ashram. This is your church. This is your temple. And no matter where you are, wherever you go, you carry it with you. Is this not better? Because in this way, you are free to develop in your own way. You come here for your inspiration, and you go out and you live in the world what you have learned. And if you do not live it, you will bring the experiences necessary upon yourself in order to bring you to the state of consciousness where you realize this, and that you will consciously make the effort. Everyone can do it. It is impossible to know. This is what is so great about that which has been forbidden to us for 2,000 years, that in truth we can attain that which Christ, the Son of God, attained, because He is our very self. Each and every one of us. No matter what you have gone through with your eyes open, and many go through all of these planes, and I have been one of them, with their eyes open, the time comes when you feel a definite compulsion to go within the cavern of your own heart. You must. Nothing can stop you. You are literally forced to do this. And you get to the state where having a lot of other things to do, and you know that you have them to do, still the compulsion is there. You are slowed down. And you find yourself stopping, closing your eyes, with every cell of your body relaxed, just thinking about God, because that's all there is for you. You can imagine how difficult it is to work under, in the world, under these circumstances. They're very difficult. I have taken all of you a long way over the years. You have had the unique and very great privilege of watching me as I have lived this life, as I put my feet upon the path and walked the way of the cross, went through the crucifixion, and have risen through some of the planes above it. And as I go through each plane, I describe it to you. But most come and listen with their minds and not with their hearts. They don't realize what they are having the privilege of witnessing and of being a part of. They have no sense of realization. And they look only at the outer form and not at the tremendous thing which is happening before their very eyes. It is not important to me, you see, because I'm going to the very end. And as long as God directs and makes it possible, I shall describe to you each step of the way. But the time will come when nothing will come forth but silence. And that silence is the greatest power, greatest manifestation the greatest conversation, the greatest description of God there is. So while you have the opportunity, make the most of it. Be lifted up and center your minds and your hearts in the heart of God. If you will all do that, He Himself will lift you up in His arms of eternal bliss and hold you close forevermore. May His blessings be upon you. Now let us pray to Him. Our Father which art in heaven,
our Father which art in heaven,
hallowed be thy name.
Hallowed be thy
name. Thy kingdom come.
Thy kingdom come.
Thy will be done.
Thy will be done.
In earth as it is in heaven.
In earth as it is in heaven.
Give us this day.
Give us this day.
Our daily bread.
Our daily bread.
And forgive us our trespasses.
And forgive us our trespasses.
As we forgive those who trespass against us.
As we forgive those who trespass against us.
And lead us not into temptation.
Lead us not into temptation.
But deliver us from all evil.
But deliver us from all evil.
For thine is the kingdom.
For thine is the kingdom.
And the power.
And the power.
And the glory.
And the glory.
Forever.
Forever.
Amen. O Heavenly Father.
O Heavenly Father.
May thy love shine forever.
May thy love shine forever.
Upon the sanctuary of my devotion.
Upon the sanctuary of my devotion.
May I be able to awaken thy love in all hearts.
May I be able to awaken thy love in all hearts.
And bring them to thee.
And bring them to thee.
Your souls and your hearts will be touched from what I have said this evening. In the years to come, you, like I do now, will look back upon this evening, this experience. You will live it again in all of its beauty